The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Before you read me, you gotta learn how to see me. Free your mind and the rest will follow. Be colorblind, don't be so shallow. Thus spake the prophets en vogue. And it's a message which after 30 years, maybe a little bit more than 30 years, still speaks to us. But we also know now how we can go further, right? We know that freeing our mind is helpful in seeing perspectives of other people. But we also know that being colorblind misses out on the individuality of people's experiences. Which is why we come here, right? We come here to listen to music we might not otherwise listen to. We come here to challenge our own perspectives. We come here to feel kindness, to feel compassion. We come to give voice to our highest aspirations, even as those aspirations may shift and may change. Welcome to this holy time and this holy place. This is a religion. Welcome to this religion done by crowdsourcing. I'm Reverend Andrew Weber, and we are all ministers here, right? I give you some of my ideas. You have your own ideas that we come together. We all engage in our ministries together, exploring, growing as people of faith and care. So come, let us worship together. And as we start our worship, we begin each Sunday, as Unitarian Universalists do across the country and around the globe, by lighting our chalice. I've asked Ann Rostosky to come forward, the new board president. We light this flame as an intention of our time together. There is nothing magical about putting match to candle. Even still, kindling this flame marks a threshold in our lives. There was a time before. Now we are in the time of a lit chalice. We are in a time of sacred worship, a time made sacred only through our presence and through our intentions. This is the outward sign and symbol of that inward intention. Let's now continue our attentions towards peace as we light our peace lamp. May peace be with us, all the people of the world. Thank you, Anne. Our gathering to hymn today is number 95, if you have a hymnal, but I can see that none of you do. It's up here. There is more love somewhere. You may rise in spirit, in body, if you want to just go to the side so we can still see the screen. It was performed on Sesame Street. That's why there was more love somewhere. What do you think's going to happen next? An activity. I have a couple you see, I have lots of props today. I was just going all out with like props because I know we're going to be talking a lot, so I want to intersperse that with activities. When you sat down or came in, hopefully you got a piece of scrap paper. If you didn't, you can raise your hand and maybe I can have Ryan run around and give people. Ryan. Yeah, run around and give people with their hands up a piece of trash here. This is trash. You don't have to worry about it. Oh, your extras are in the back. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you're good. Now, if I get really boring, you can start reading about. I guess I have craft tubes or boxes. Yeah. But whoever needs a piece of paper, just raise your hand. It's just a scrap paper. And here's what we're gonna do. You never know where I'm going to go with this in the morning, do you? But it's sort of constant that no one sits in the front, and you may regret that decision today. I'm just saying, you may regret that today. You may regret it other days too, but today. So a couple over here. You can give one to your dad too in the back. Everyone can have a piece of paper. Oh, he's got one. Never mind. And for the folks online, this will be a very poignant example. For you, because we cannot give you a piece of paper. You can get your own piece of paper. It's just any scrap paper. So if you want to do that, feel free. And then crumple it up in a ball. You have a couple more here. And everyone got their paper? And here's what I want you to do. Throw it in the recycling bin. Yeah, just throw it in the recycling. Throw it in the Ooh, what is that? We'll work on this later. Yeah. This can be an after service activity. I'll be picking it up. That's not paper airplane. Yeah. So, I don't know what the problem was. I got mine in, no problem. What was the problem? I like that, yeah. It was too far away. The example here, this is what I'm trying to say, and the people online, you had no chance, right? I mean, like, throw your paper. Good luck. The example here is our society and equity and equality. Right. For some people, doing certain things is really easy. Why did everyone have such a problem? Okay, well, I have privilege in this instance because I'm standing right here. This is not to say that people couldn't walk forward. This is not to say that we couldn't help each other. But it's also not to say, like, what if I stood here and say, okay, throw it in. Right? So think about other areas in our lives where things may be, good shot with that airplane. It's not the best paper for airplanes. But where might there other places where this comes into play? If we're of limited mobility, there's a post office in my town, right on Main Street. Post office on Main Street. It's a historic building. So it doesn't have to have a ramp. That's a really hard post office to get into, right? That's an obvious example. There are other many other examples. And that's where we're going to start talking about this, is this is an example for us that we can embody right now. And it was going to be for the children too, but it was just Ryan. So nice job, Ryan. And thank you. And we will sing Ryan out unless he wants to stay. And I did put two lyrics, as I did last time, because the original. And sometimes we get anxious about this word. So you can choose now, take a moment, what am I going to sing? And then let's sing. Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the love of God surround you everywhere you. Try to be intentional about things. The reason that we that we can change hymn lyrics, there's a privilege there too. And we should acknowledge that. Because some people who write music do not want their hymns changed. They say, that's how I wrote it. That is the song. If you're going to sing this, don't change it. I don't know what she says about her music. But for some people, like Carolyn McDade, Spirit of Life, she says, do not change the lyrics. But that's a classic one that Unitarian Universalists all over the world change. They've edited something. They put something else in. So just be aware of that. That's a privilege we have, too. Shifting a little bit, there's a lot of stuff we're going over today. And I'm going to start with the eighth principle. And there it is. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association Covenant, to affirm and promote, that's the heading of all the principles. You may recognize that one. Here's the eighth. Journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. Now, here's the thing. Unitarian Universalism, if you know, I have it right here. It's on bookmarks. We have seven principles, right? Have people heard that before? It's like, oh, say seven principles. This is the eighth. We even have seven. We have it listed in our foyer. It's, if you had a hymnal, it's on the first page, those seven principles. And they all start, we the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association covenant to affirm and promote. And then the seven are listed, from inherent worth and dignity of every person to respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Right, 1 through 7. So this eighth principle was created locally, actually. Created locally and first adopted by the Unitarian Universalists of Mount Airy, which was then Restoration in Philadelphia. You can go to the next slide. I think I'll see what I have as the next slide. It was created by Reverend, here's their a sort of an amalgamation from their website of learning about the eighth principle. It was created by Reverend Paula Cole Jones after years of working with congregations. She did district work, and she worked with congregations, and she saw that people can support our seven principles without thinking about systemic racism, without thinking about other oppressions. An initial draft was composed in 2013, so that's 10 years, by Bruce Pollock Johnson. And later, a group of anti-racist activists gathered to refine it. So over these 10 years, the eighth principle has become a movement for congregations to enter into conversation. It came up for a vote at our general national meeting. It did not pass, but it's still put forth as a way congregations can enter into this dialogue, this conversation about systemic racism, institutional racism and oppression, and see what we may be actively or passively supporting. Now in 2017, this is related, I'm trying to give us background of like where we are now, what are we doing? In 2017, there was a large push in Unitarian Universalism to talk about white supremacy. Now when I say that term, there's a lot of feelings, I know, come up. And this is not the way that you may be first thinking. It's not mobs of people in white cloaks and hoods. That's not what they're talking about when they say white supremacy. The white supremacy that was brought up and talked about a lot was the one that permeates our culture, our entire culture, which says very subtly and ubiquitously that someone who has light-colored skin has more worth than someone who has dark-colored skin. And it's a really, really important discussion, and there's really difficult conversations to be had here. And here's a little taste, so to speak, a taste of this. There it is. Which a list of characteristics of white supremacy culture. And this is from whitesupremacyculture.info. If you remember one website from this morning, I'd say that's the one to look at, whitesupremacyculture.info. This graphic is from that website. I cut it in half so it could be a little bit easier to see. But this is their graphic. And some characteristics that they label from white supremacy culture. Either or thinking. Objectivity. Yep, feel free to come up. That's fine. Yeah, you can look at this screen or this screen, and there still is this empty first row still there. You can come up. That's okay. Objectivity, individualism, quantity over quality, fear of open conflict, paternalism, defensiveness, power hoarding, perfectionism, worship of the written word. Each one of these characteristics is explored more at depth on this website. And so they go into, like, what do they mean by this characteristic? Why is it a white supremacy culture characteristic? What does it look like? And each one of these permeates our society and our religion, because our religion is from society, right? We feel uncomfortable when something imperfect happens in worship. I'll push us out of that. I'll keep messing up. Don't worry. But that's where we are. Like, we have these characteristics. Hence, leadership in our national organization started talking about our faith as one steeped in white supremacy. That does not feel comfortable. Like, who here feels comfortable saying, oh yeah, my faith is one that has white supremacy? No, that's not something that we want to own and talk about. That doesn't feel good. And that's the point. It shouldn't feel comfortable. It shouldn't feel good. The push is to do some actual work. The push is to have the conversations and see what systems of oppression we may be supporting, whether mindfully or just because that's the way things are. What systems of oppression we're living into without even thinking about it. That's the point of the eighth principle. That's the point of using that term white supremacy, to get that conversation going and hopefully move that conversation toward action, to doing something about it. Now, no one said coming to church was going to be easy. I didn't say that. You're here to be comforted, but also to be challenged. So what are we doing? What are we doing as a community to push against institutional racism and oppression? That's an open question. We don't need answers right now. That's an open question. But one I hope we can continue to think about. And I said there's a lot to do today. That was my brief introduction on the eighth principle, like why it exists, what the purpose of it is, where it came from. And I want to shift a little bit. And this is, like I said, I have lots of activities. I'm shifting to a story. There's the story, yeah. Who knows this story? The Emperor's New Clothes. I hope most people know it. So there's an emperor, there's a leader who's very vain, and tailors come and they say, well, we're going to make you this fantastic cloak, and depending on which variation, only the wise will be able to see it, or only those who know what beauty looks like will be able to see it. And the emperor or the king say, oh, well, of course I can see it. I'm wise. I know what beauty looks like. And the tailors have given him nothing. He doesn't actually have any clothing. So he's walking around naked. And he tells the townspeople, look at this wonderful cloak I have. Only if you're wise can you see it. And they're like, oh, yeah, I can see that. Absolutely. Yeah, it looks great. Right? And it depends on the thing. But usually there's a little boy, maybe that's him right there, who says, he's naked. He's not wearing any clothes. And only when that spark comes, they're like, oh, you know what? I don't see it either. Yeah. Yeah, this whole thing has been a fabrication, a story. And this story helps me illustrate so much of the conflicts and so much of the conversations that are happening with Unitarian Universalism right now. And I'll go into why. Because it's easy to agree with others. It's really easy to be like, oh, okay, yeah, yeah, I hear what you're saying, yep. It's easy to come into that. And it's also really easy to be on the other side. It's like, well, whatever you say, I'm against it. What did you say? Nope. What did you say? Nope. And the hard part is that part in the middle where you're like, think for yourself, where you're like, oh, does he have clothing on? I'm not just reacting because I don't like the leader of, you know, I just don't like the emperor. I'm just not just saying he's wrong. I mean, think for myself and see. And this comes up in the next two issues I'm going to talk about. So our next reading is from a letter, an open letter written by Jay Kiskel and Frank Casper in 2020. I was off by a lot on that one. In 2020, this was after the eighth principle had been started, not a direct not a direct result, but I will try to weave the threads together so you see why things are happening. Because sometimes we hear about one thing, we hear about another, we're like, that doesn't make sense. And we're like, oh wait, there are reasons that these are happening. Here's the letter, not in full. We are writing you to solicit your interest in helping to reclaim our Unitarian Universalist fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Since April 2017, our denominational leadership, specifically our UUA Board of Trustees, have endeavored to impose what is tantamount to a religious orthodoxy on our historically non-dogmatic faith community. In the wake of the 2017 hiring imbroglio, this is not a word I usually use, over the Southern Region executive position, resulting in the resignation of UUA President Peter Morales, the UUA board voted to declare that Unitarian Universalism is a white supremacist, both in its structure and values. Consequently, they advocate and have started to work toward dismantling that structure and the values upon which it is based. So that's a little bit what we heard about. And as the events surrounding the recent publication of Reverend Dr. Todd Eckloff's book, The Gadfly Papers, clearly show, this new religious orthodoxy will brook no criticism. Reverend Eckloff published a book which was very much against this. Reverend Eckloff's book examines this new orthodoxy of white supremacist culture and criticizes the tactics employed to dismantle it. The response by denominational leadership was instantaneous and overwhelmingly condemnatory, resulting in Reverend Eckloff's public censure by the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association. Regardless of one's views on the merits of his book, the response by lay leadership reveals a disturbing effort to quell dissent and to stifle differing views. Some of our ministers who have questioned the UUMA actions have themselves been disciplined. These trends should be enough to give any UU cause for serious concern. That was their letter. Now, the fifth principle project was started as a response to a couple things happening in our national faith organization. One is the labeling of ourselves as a white supremacist movement. They're reacting against that. The second thing they're reacting against is a response against how governance happens at the national level. Echoing a 2009 report on the fifth principle, which found that the Unitarian Universalist Association Board of Trustees and our annual meeting to be, quote, dramatically broken. This is with respect to our governance. That's the fifth principle. Remember the seven principles? The movement and the 2009 report take their names from this fifth principle, the right of conscience, the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. That's the main issue. And throughout this entire dialogue, whether I'm talking about the eighth principle, the fifth principle project, Article 2, which is the next big thing I'm going to sort of introduce and say, oh my gosh, there's more big stuff happening. Remember the emperor's new clothes. That's why you need to remember that story. Because we can choose to believe what a majority of people is saying. We can choose to go against the majority. We can, or dare I say, we should, look for ourselves and see what resonates with our reason and with our hearts. I put the story right before, the story of the Emperor's New Clothes, right before the Fifth Principle Project, because the more I look at what they're saying, the more really big issues I have with their conclusions and their methods. Now, the letter I quoted was sent to over 1,000 congregations. It was emailed, I think, to over 1,000 congregations. They state that in their website, mainly to lay leaders and not to clergy. Now, this of in itself is very telling. Not that clergy are better suited to hear complaints, right? We're all ministers here. It's okay to reach out to other congregations through their lay leadership. But that some of the background is lost. And I think this was done intentionally. Some of that background is lost. The book, which was written by Dr. Eckloff, the censure which took place, the process of credentialing, the discussions of misconduct, are all much more accessible to members of the clergy than those who are members of congregations. The letter was penned in such a way to sort of get around that information of how this happened, what actually took place. And the group continues to do this, and they continue to spout their own stories against others' experiences. So there's one narrative here, and there's another narrative here. The book that was written was a response against white supremacy. And yes, the minister who wrote it was eventually removed from fellowship, i.e. his credentials were taken away. The rationale given from the governing body was that he had deeply hurt others and refused to acknowledge that he had hurt those people, and he refused to get into conversation about that pain. The fifth principle project says that he was censured and defrocked, if you want to use the Catholic term, for having different ideas, which is not the case. So I encourage you to look at the fifth principle project, see the ministers who are quoted there, and this is a sad part for me. Because there are a couple ministers who have their names associated, who have written a blog post. Look at who's quoted on this website, and then do a search for UU clergy misconduct. And see the parallels. It's sad, because these are clergy who have done something out of covenant, have not been able to reconcile that, and are looking for a community, and this is one place they've found it. And sadly, this has become a community for those people who have been inappropriate in our faith, those ministers who, when I look at the list of who've been removed from fellowship, bullying, abusive behavior, defaming, inability to maintain professional relationships. And the narrative they give is very, very different. I find it sad but telling. And I have a personal stake in this process. So I'm not just saying, oh, these people are bad. I have a personal stake because for a number of years prior to me being here, I resigned my fellowship. I said, I cannot be credentialed right now. It's not working out. I was not happy with the process of entering back into that. I'm still not happy with it. I can use current language, I language. I am not happy with that process. But I stayed in and continued to stay in conversation with the credentialing body. I continued to be civil with them and work on what we need to do together. And these colleagues have not. And that means a lot. I mean, that really hits me deeply. Now, the fact remains, despite how they act, the fact remains that democracy is not always done well. It's really hard. If you're at GA, virtually or in person, you know that with a national organization of so many different free thinkers, like, who's a free thinker here? Okay, get tens of thousands of them, like, get more of you together. Let's do democracy. It's going to be tough. It's not going to come out exactly as people like it, right? We send delegates nationally to vote. Well, how did congregations pick our delegates? Well, we did it by who's going and who wants to, right? Some congregations do it by who's been before. Some have actually a vote. And how do they, why do ministers get a vote? Just because I'm a minister? Is that fair? These are questions for all of us, right? And how does someone without the means attend our national gathering and have their voices heard? It was in Pittsburgh. It was easier for us to get there. What if you're across the country? Virtual, you still have to pay quite a bit to attend if you're virtual. There are faults, there are missteps. But this group, in my mind, is spreading divisiveness and creating barriers rather than working toward reconciliation. And now, just as with theology, when I talk about theology, these are my beliefs, right? I'm not trying to persuade you to think like me. I'm saying this is what I've found. I'm trying you to persuade you to think for yourselves. Don't say, Andrew thinks that, I'm with him. Don't say, Andrew thinks that, I'm definitely against him. Say, look for yourselves, right? Don't just say the emperor has beautiful clothes. Don't just say the emperor is naked. Look for yourself. Talk to others. Listen to your head. Listen to your heart. Come from who you are. Come from who you want to be in the world. Start there of who you are and then search with humility. Which brings me to my next activity. No, I have all these props and activities. I was having fun with this service. I hope you do too. Here's what I want to do very briefly, is we're going to define ourselves as a congregation right now. Don't worry, this isn't going to get carved in stone, etched in stone, or tattooed. It may get put up there. What are some values we share? Just shout out values. Accepting. Just keep going.
Peaceful.
Peaceful. Someone else.
Sharing.
Okay. A couple more.
Kind.
Kind. Yeah? Liberal? Is that a big L or a little one?
Questioning.
Questioning. Respectful. Truth seeking. That's another one. Whoops. It's another one. Is that a capital T or honest? Okay, great. And now, who do we want to be in the world? So not just, these are our values. What do we want to do in the world? What do we want to do in the world? Survive? No, that's fine. That's a... Okay, help others. Create a better world. Find peace. Work for justice.
Work for world peace.
I'll just underline this one. Find / make peace.
Promote reason and
conscience. Yes, yes. Absolutely. It's not just feelings. Reason too. I don't know how to spell those words. There you go. Why do we meet? Like, why do we gather? Why are we here?
Sense of community.
Why else? Is that the only reason people come?
Together, anything is possible.
You'll hear that again. Together, anything is possible. So more is possible when we come together in community, when we share our resources, maybe? Yeah? Share spirituality for growth? Okay. Now, here's the task. Who is a good wordsmith? Anyone here good with words? Jerry got pointed out. So let's make this into a phrase that right now we are going to say this is our mission of this Sunday morning. Let's try to do that. How about what gets as much as we can? Like, who are we? Why do we come together? And what do we want to see in the world? What if we just pick, we're a peaceful community looking to help others. That gets some of it. What are we missing? Oh yeah, we got some up here too. Can you write that, Mike? We are a peaceful community looking to help others. You can just delete those words and then put this up there. That's fine. You can make it big too. Look at that, we just did our mission. So let's write that down. We are a peace. Put him on the spot. I said, if this happens, it can happen. If not, that's okay. Peaceful community working to help others. Yeah. So who was like, yeah, this is who we are this morning. Like, who was like 100% behind this? All right. And who's like, he's like 50 to 60% or somewhere in there. All right. And who's like, you just completely missed what we were saying. Who's there? Or in the like 10 to 20. All right, let's hold that for a little. Let's hold that. It was a fast, impromptu process, but let's hold that and shift to our next piece, which is the Article 2 study report. I said we're gonna get through a lot of stuff. We're gonna do some activities. We're gonna have some talking. This reading is from the Article 2 study report. Absolutely.
I want to take a second here, Voice to God jumping in at the back, because there were quite a few folks who have joined us on Zoom today that had similar language
in
the chat.
Yes, Zoom, share
helpful.
Us, share.
So we had words like creative, curious, help others, build community, simply be, learn to listen. And then Sheila was kind enough to put together, as an accepting, peaceful community, we remain respectful while engaging with others to make the world a better place.
Maybe we should edit the one we just have. Why don't you copy that and put it in there? And here's Mike living out what we just did, right? I said, people online, you can't throw your waste in the recycling bin, but we can have your voices heard. So thank you, Mike, for stepping out from his place of privilege to help those, at least in this moment, who are not. He's not a plant, but that worked really well. Yeah. That's cool. More on board with that. Who's more on board with this next one? Who's like, less? It's okay. We won't, like, you're not going to be, okay. Yeah. So hold on to these. And then now we're going to shift to Article 2. And I'm trying to weave these threads so we see what's some of the big picture, but also a message for us as individuals and as a congregation of how we live with all these things happening in what is our faith. Whether or not we say, I'm a member of the Unitarian Universalist Association, or I just came this morning because I was feeling sad. Like, that's okay. We're still part of this faith together. This is from the Article 2 Study Report. Article 2 of the Unitarian Universalist Association Bylaws, Principles, and Purposes is the foundation for all of the work of our UUA and its member congregations and covenanted communities. It is the covenant to which all of our congregations and covenanted communities pledge themselves when they become members of our UUA. Our current principles and purposes were last substantially revisited or revised in 1985. Right, for almost 40 years now. At General Assembly, that's the large national meeting, 2017, there was discussion of amending the principles to add an eighth principle. We heard this. Addressing racism and an amended first principle addressing non-human life. The fifth principle was the subject of a report in 2009, which dealt with the ways in which GA and other Unitarian Universalist gatherings do and don't embody an inclusive democratic process, right? We've heard that too. The seventh principle has also been the subject of discussion about possible amendments. Ellipsis. The commission is charged with reviewing all sections of Article 2 and is free to revise, replace, or restructure them as needed to meet the objectives stated above. This is from the board saying, commission, this is what you're doing. There is nothing sacred about the number of principles or sources, nor the specific wordings, nor in the way that Article 2 is laid out. We encourage creativity. The board would like to see an Article 2 that is inspirational, memorable, and poetic. The language should be inclusive and welcoming and explicitly anti-racist. Article 2, it must be remembered, are broad statements of principle and purpose, not detailed programmatic or implementation plans. The commission is urged to carefully consider the existing language for its implications and for the errors of inadequacies of these implications. We recognize that one steady criticism over decades has been that the language of the principles is not poetic. You can decide whether or not they met that. Right? We encourage the commission to consider framings of our principles that allows them to be brief and poetic, perhaps by transferring explanatory clauses and expansions to a subsidiary document that expounds on what the commission sees as included and intended in that shorter form. Like, this is a board commission. It's a lot. We particularly urge the commission to review the sources, the revised listing from the 2010 proposal, and its explicit inclusion of Unitarianism and Universalism as our sources seems timely to us. And there are other recommended sources in that proposal. In addition, there have been energetic discussions about how other faith traditions, such as Buddhism and Islam, among others, might be included or put on footings more equal to those of Christianity and Judaism. Is underneath our principles, there are listed sources. Christianity and Judaism are listed, and other world religions. So, in light of all of the history we're talking about, the time has come to change our bylaws, our national bylaws, especially Article 2, that part which lays out the principles and the purposes. So now hopefully we have a little bit more history of informing us what is happening with the current proposal. Yes, I mean, I hope so. That's what I'm hoping to give you. So when we see where things are coming from, we can glean a little bit more fully the rationale, the individuals, the thoughts behind the actions. So the Board of Trustees, which, yes, remember, we have some issues with how democratic they are or are not. They charged a commission of diverse Unitarian Universalists to propose changes in language to our national bylaws. This commission spent years in study. They spent years contacting Unitarian Universalist congregations to get input. Sadly, this was a time of protracted transition for Thomas Paine. And it was a time when I had resigned my fellowship. So we were both sort of out of the loop, so to speak. Right? I mean, it's no fault of our own, but you and I missed out on a lot of the conversation and back study. Which is why a big change may have been a surprise to some of you. And to me too, really. Like, come to Unitarian Universalism. Here are 7 guiding principles. You don't have to agree with them or even believe them, but they're good ideas, good ideals to guide our faith. Oh, and P.S., they're probably going to get replaced. Like, hold on, what? What's happening? That's something big. That's why I came. Those ideals are the very core of my theology, how I interact with my religion. And breathe. And remember to breathe, right? Because the principles aren't being taken away. The content is actually very similar when we look at the new words, but the words are new. The words are definitely new. I spoke this week with Reverend Cheryl Walker, who's a local minister and who's on the commission to edit the bylaws. She's co-chair, and of course she's biased, right? Because this is her work. This is, again, taking that everything with a grain of salt. Do your own work. So I talked with Cheryl. She's biased, but her recommendation about the Article 2 is reading through 3 times. First, read them through and see how you feel. That's it. Second, read them through and think, see what you think. And then after you read them through a third time, come up with questions you may have. I've printed out a couple copies of the study report. You can follow me or not, but the study report, I have 2 copies of like the full study report, 20-some pages, if you want to see the board's words of saying what to do, the old language, the new language. I also have the proposed revision, 10 copies of this. So take, share, make more copies if you want to read through. My suggestion is to read them, to read through them maybe 3 times. Don't just react against Cheryl because she's changed things. Don't just agree with her because she's on the commission. This is a big change. It's a big change which was not started lightly, but one which some of us have come late to. Now, here's where I am. I'm committed to getting myself and getting Thomas Paine up to speed on what is happening. So I'm preaching on Article 2. I did before, and it may come up again. You'll hear my ideas about the proposal, how it impacts, and we're doing more too, not just preaching. There's starting in late September, I'm going to be facilitating a course around spiritual reflection on Article 2. The course is framed as a deep dive into the proposition. It's not written by the commission, it's not written by me, it's a third party, and it's a way to get to know it better. There's going to be a blurb. There is a blurb in the newsletter. Newsletter came out today. And there's an announcement slide, too, if you're interested in being part of this class. And I'm trying to set up a time when us and maybe other congregations can get together and have a Zoom meeting with the commission. I reached out and they said, well, we don't meet with individual congregations. And I'm like, great, thank you. Okay. What if we get other congregations together? They said, yeah, we could do that. And I'm like, wonderful. So I'm going to see if we can have that happen, too, where we can have our questions answered. If you want to know more about it, go on UUA, just search Article 2 UUA FAQs. Their FAQs are really good because it's all the questions that most of us would have, the frequently asked questions, so to speak. Why now? What happened to this language? Why are you doing this? A lot of those are answered right there. And my advice remains the same. It remains the same for the eighth principle, for the fifth principle project, for Article 2. My advice remains, if you happen to come here for the first time and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, this is my first time at a Unitarian Universalist congregation, my advice remains the same. Here's my advice. Remember the three activities we did. That's my advice. Think about how others are experiencing the world. Try to be aware of what systems of oppression we might inadvertently be supporting. Two, don't believe everything the majority holds is true. And don't just question everything because you want to question everything. Listen to your heart, listen to your head, and make your own conclusions. And then three, it's exciting, it's emotional, and it's really difficult to get a group of people defined by one sentence, by one group of words. Feelings might get hurt, and it often will not end in consensus, right? Compromise usually means that no one gets everything they want. Those are my three takeaways. For the Unitarian Universalist Association, for Thomas Paine, for your individual life, for all of it. Wow. Wow, right? It's a very different service than what I imagined. There's so much. Yeah. I was like, I'll just talk about Article 2 and what comes up. So much today, so much history, so many feelings, so much excitement, fear, betrayal. Yeah, we come with a lot. We come to this space with a lot, with whatever is going on in our lives, whatever's in our minds and with our hearts, and we're provided with more. We're given even more, the dreamings, the hurts of others, which is exactly why we come together, right? That's why we come together. This is a place of sharing our hopes, of sharing our failures, of sharing our feelings, of sharing our joys. And each week we take a special time, which we're going to do right now. We take a special time to listen to each other. Now, we can have times of heated conversation about bylaw changes and about Article 5 and Article 2 and Principle 5 or 8 later. I don't think this is the best time for that. That can happen. Now is the time to share from deep within us those feelings which overflow into this community and must be shared to heighten our joys and lessen our sorrows.
Sharing, let us bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. Words will show up on the screen here momentarily.
Please pray with me. The sun rises between two green hills. In the foreground, circles of stone and earth radiate outward from a stone center. creative spirit, source of life and love, we give thanks for the beauty of this day and for the company of those assembled here. Thank you for the breezes of change, clearing our heads and bringing fresh ideas. May they cleanse our minds of the oppressionism and isms that divide us. Thank you for the flame of hope, the heat of righteous anger, the warmth of compassion, and the fire of commitment. May they bubble the cauldrons of transformation. Thank you for the oceans of love, rivers of connection, tears of relief, and pools of serenity. May healing waters flow over us and through us and among us, wearing down the sharp rocks of despair to bring joy in the morning. Thank you for the good earth beneath us, around us, and within us. May we take this clay and co-create a new realm of justice and beauty. Thank you for all these and more. We accept our gifts and commit to building, sculpting, painting, singing, and dancing them to life, to abundant life. So be it. Blessed be and amen. Let us join once more in singing. If you wish, you may rise and go to the side so people can see, or rise just in spirit, for when our heart is in a holy place. The board and I met last week, and among other things, came up with a slogan for the year, which Anne has shared. Not something which defines us, but a phrase we can use to lead us into shared ministry. So I share it now as our closing words. And after the announcements, their postscript is a song with the same name, a closing words. Together, anything is possible. Amen and amen.
Thank you for your support. You can donate by mail or by PayPal. many of you are sending checks, and that's fine. You can donate online at www.tpuuf.org. Click the donate button, and it will take you to a PayPal page where you can donate. Or you can drop a donation in the collection box in the back.